This is CICK News. Yesterday morning at about 4:45 a.m., Smithers Fire Rescue was called to inland truck and equipment, which was ablaze. Crews from Smithers and Telqua worked quickly to control the fire, which engulfed the parts and services building. No cause of the fire has been released yet. In a special Earth Day segment, we had a very special guest join us in the CICK studio yesterday for a unique and wild conversation. Bruce Kanowski is a lynx puppet, who's a passionate advocate for wildlife conservation. Bruce was in Smithers to share his insights from his adventures and how he inspires people, especially kids, to appreciate and protect our beautiful and natural world. Bruce is used to being the interviewer, but we turned the tables on him a bit, and I interviewed Bruce for a short stint at CICK to promote his Keep It Wild BC campaign in an effort to preserve our wild environment for future generations. If you'd like to see a picture of Bruce, make sure to follow CICK Out There on Instagram and CICK Events on Facebook for a snapshot of Bruce doing a station ID. Bruce, this is so exciting. Introduce yourself. I mean, I just noticed you outside and it's kind of hard to miss a big lynx walking around downtown Smithers. So, yeah.
Well, my name's Bruce Kanowski and I'm just traveling around BC talking to people about wild spaces and wild places and what makes them special, you know. And well, I kind of notice that my nieces and my nephew, my kids, they're always on their tablets and they're never outside anymore, you know. And I just wanted to show them, hey, there's lots of wild spaces left, and I think it's important, you know, that we show them and people understand that, hey, we can still go there. We can still do these things, you know?
So what's wild in Smithers for you? What's wild enough for Bruce Kanowski?
The mountains, the river. Where was I yesterday? We were in Hazleton, and we were at the confluence of the Bulkley and the Stikine. And man, let me tell you, that's some real beauty right there.
Absolutely.
And I saw a rabbit, and I started to salivate. I almost chased it, but then I just paused and enjoyed the moment.
Oh, beautiful. Bruce, I think I did tell you before we were recording, my last name means rabbit, but it's just a name, okay? No. Close your mouth. Please, Bruce, please close your mouth.
So, I'm just joking.
Let's just keep it professional, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so wild spaces, that's exciting. So you mentioned the river, the mountains. Yeah, what else? I mean, like, do you have a message? Do you want...
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just try and keep BC wild, you know, and... It takes everybody, I think. It takes hunters and environmentalists and fishermen, and it takes all sorts. Miners. Everybody needs to do their part, and I think you'll learn everybody finds the beauty everywhere, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful sentiment. And it is Earth Day today, too, so is there anything extra special about your message today, or are you doing something to sort of commemorate the event?
Well, not really. I think every day can be Earth Day, you know, in your very own way.
Solid. Yeah, that's beautiful.
So, let me ask you, when you go outside, where do you go? What's your favorite place?
My favorite place is to go to the Bulkley River, actually, the Wetsenqua. I live close to a really beautiful park. It's like one of Smithers' last, like, really treed parks here. And I walk through the park, down the trails. I've seen moose down there. And yeah, that's right. And yeah, I actually just like to go. And on a hot enough day, I just jump right into the river. But it's a very strong river, so people should be careful about it. Yeah.
Okay.
I like to pick berries on the mountain when it's berry season. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I see wild things everywhere. You know, you walk down the street, you see deer. I had a moose that was actually hanging out in my neighbor's backyard as well. But yeah, it's kind of hard to look around and not find beauty here.
Yeah, and exactly. I think that's the point. You know, we need to show these young kids of mine that, hey, there's still lots of beauty out there and it's worth protecting.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for coming into CICK. And for anyone tuning in and listening, this has been CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio, where we are proudly broadcasting on the unceded Wet'suwet'en territory. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Nice to meet you.
Acrid blue smoke enveloped the neighborhood of Victoria Drive in Smithers by the time that CICK arrived on the scene around 9 a.m. No one was harmed, though employees of the heavy truck parts and service company were really shaken up, including Ivan, who worked in the shipping and receiving building and was visibly upset as we stood watching the crew pump water onto the building that he planned to work out of today. What's your first name, please?
It's Ivan.
Ivan. Okay, Ivan, what do you do here at Inland?
Shipping and receiving in parts.
Okay. Did you get the text at 5 a.m. this morning, too?
Yeah, at 6 o'clock. I was just about in telco, because I live in Houston, so I was on my ride into work. I got the message and came in to just watch it.
Yeah. What does this mean for you? Like, is this job security or whatever? What does it mean?
I don't know. It's all scary right now.
Yeah.
It's way too surreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad there's nobody inside and just everything is replaceable. That's all it is.
Yeah. You seem actually pretty shaken up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scary stuff, hey?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Hey, thanks, Ivan.
Thank you.
Jaden, who works on the front counter at Inland, was woken up this morning by a text of a video of the building on fire. She wonders what will happen to her job now that she doesn't have a building to work out of. Seeing as they are a parts and equipment company, a physical location is imperative to this work.
My name's Jaden.
Where are we?
We are standing on the road in front of Inland Kenworth, or what used to be Inland Kenworth.
It's very stinky here.
All the rubber and the oil's burning for sure.
Mm-hmm. When did you get the call that this was happening?
I got a text at about 5 o'clock this morning with a video of the building on fire.
Yep. Okay, is this water because they're flooding the area?
Yeah, so basically what we dub this area is Inland Lake. It happens every spring. Right now they're pumping water in so that they can spray it onto the building, and it's just collecting and it's making a big pool here.
But it always pools like this every year?
It does. Every spring it pools like this, yeah.
Oh.
Not quite this excessive. I mean, this is a little extra water than what normally happens. Mm-hmm. But
what do you think is going to happen with your job?
Right now we're not really sure. We're moving some people over to our Houston location. It's something that I've heard, but right now we have absolutely no answers. Everybody's just trying to navigate and make a plan.
Thanks very much, Jade.
Yeah, thank you.
Crews worked in knee-deep water that surrounded the building, which was pumped in from across the road, along with the collected water in the sunken-in lot surrounding the building. By that time, they had been there for 4 hours and would continue to extinguish the smoldering cinder block building for the rest of the morning. Smithers Fire Deputy Chief acknowledged the fast and coordinated effort of many different emergency and non-emergency services that made managing this fire as swift and safe as possible.
I'm Sean Rowell, the Deputy Chief of Smithers Fire. We're on Victoria Street.
Okay. Obviously, people will be able to hear in the background that there's the sounds of construction, trucks running, also water running. Tell me what you know about what happened to Inland Trucking last night.
Not much at this time. We're still investigating. The investigation's going to be ongoing for a length of time. We were called out at about 3:45. When we arrived, the structure was fully involved, and with help from our mutual aid partners, Telco Fire, got containment approximately an hour and a half later.
Yeah. So, this whole building was just Inland Trucking?
As far as I know, Inland Trucking is the only occupant of this structure.
Okay. So, it was Smithers Fire, Telco Fire, and you said, did you say was it within an hour and a half you had the blaze?
Yeah, we had containment, which means that we had it in such a state we were confident it wasn't going to expand to other buildings.
Any idea what the cause?
No, that's going to take some time to investigate. At this time, we're just focused on getting it completely out and mopping up all the hotspots.
Any concerns for safety for the neighboring businesses?
Well, right now, the smoke is hanging quite low. That can be a concern for residents in the neighborhood because especially if they have breathing problems already, this is going to exacerbate that. We're going to do our best to get it knocked down and completely out as soon as possible, but the smoke from these fires is highly toxic and unsafe. So we'd ask people to, if they're going to be at home, keep the doors shut, windows shut, give us time to get it out so we can contain that.
Is there anything I didn't ask that's important to include in this?
Just that we're really appreciative of, we had ambulance come out, we had hydro come out, we had natural gas come out, and RCMP, and they were all very supportive and helpful on this, and just really grateful to the volunteers that show up for these events.
No service interruptions, right?
I'm not sure about, because power's been shut off to this building, okay. And there's a transformer here. I'm not sure exactly what was shut down to allow us to do our work. We obviously can't spray water when there's hydro lines that are active. Mm-hmm. And so hydro came out quite quickly to shut down and make it safe for us.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You bet.
Thank you to Deputy Fire Chief Sean Rowell, Jaden, and Ivan for taking the time to speak with me today. To hear this story as well as see the photos, visit frequencynews.ca and find Smithers CSEK News Stories. This week marks Violence Prevention Against Women Week in British Columbia, a critical time for our northern communities to reflect on the pressing issues surrounding gender-based violence. With alarming statistics showing that 1 in 3 women will experience physical or sexual violence in their lifetime, today we'll hear from Bronwyn Young, a worker at the Northern Society for Domestic Peace, who's raising awareness through a powerful art installation, as well as Constable Jocelyn Feudart from the Smithers RCMP, who will discuss the law enforcement perspective on these challenging issues. Together, they're going to provide insight into the realities faced by survivors and the collective responsibility that we share in creating a safer community.
My name is Bronwyn Young.
Okay, Bronwyn, we're at the corner of Main and 2nd, and you are blindfolded, and you also have handprints on you. Can you tell me what's going on here?
Mm-hmm. So this is Violence Prevention Against Women Week, and I'm out here doing a bit of an art installation, call to action, just to promote awareness and participation in the conversation around preventing violence against women.
And what is the installation?
So I'm here on the corner. I've got some different colored paints and some gloves for people who are willing and feeling brave enough to put a handprint on me to show their solidarity or to acknowledge their their experiences with violence. And I'm quite impressed by people who are sharing this with me. I feel like my body is quite full of people's handprints.
It is. I'll show you the picture after, because for listeners, you're also blindfolded. Why are you blindfolded?
Because there's so much shame around violence against women, particularly for the women who have experienced violence. And I wanted them to feel that they could walk up to me without having to necessarily make eye contact or to feel that layer of vulnerability. I'll take the vulnerability for them.
And your sign says, if you have been affected by violence, leave a sign. Do you know when someone is leaving a handprint on you? Are people speaking to you as well when this is happening? Can you walk me through that?
Sure. So it's been a variety of experiences with these handprints. Sometimes it is a small town. People say, oh, that's Bronwyn. And then they come over, and I've known them from the past through my work with Domestic Peace. And we have a conversation. Other people are having conversations with my lovely colleagues who are here with me. And some are quite quiet, just want to know a couple things and then leave a handprint.
This is about awareness. It's also about visibility as well, though. But do you feel vulnerable in this situation and kind of what's going on inside you for that?
I don't. And the reason why I don't is because as a woman coming out here to do this, I knew I needed a safety plan. And so I created some safety around me to do this in a way that was not going to make me feel vulnerable. So I give thanks to my colleagues again for being my spotters while I'm out here and helping to ensure that this is a safe experience.
Absolutely. What do you feel is your motivation for not only visibility, but also the work that you constantly do toward preventing violence against women and female-identifying people?
Mm-hmm. I'm really hoping and striving for men to step up into the conversation and to be advocates and protectors and to say something when they see something, when they hear something, and to really encourage the men around them to do better. There are a lot of good men in our community, and one of the things about violence is that it is so hidden, especially in intimate partner violence or in sexual violence. And so please, gentlemen, do what you can to help protect the women in your community.
What does that look like from the NSDP? Do you have services or even like resources or documentation for men who maybe they hear it and they think, well, that's not me, you know, I'm not violent, and that's kind of maybe as far as a lot of men go with this.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like them to do to go further?
Please talk to the women in your life. So there are statistics that say that 1 in either every 2 to 3 women will experience sexual or physical violence in their lifetime. So it is an epidemic. It is happening all around us. And the culture of permissive behavior around this needs to end. And I do believe that men need to take the lead in that.
Mm-hmm. I'm Constable Jocelyn Floydart. I'm your media relations officer for Smithers.
Okay, so we're at the corner of Main and Second here. I just had an interview with Bronwyn about really her drivers for exposure, information about violence toward women. But what do you feel like needs to change?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, first of all, so far this year, we've had 33 reported cases of intimate partner violence. So that number in itself is actually, for our community, quite large. And those are women who feel brave to come forward and share with police, you know, situations that they're in that are violent. What we're very concerned about is the number of women and families who are currently living at risk who don't feel comfortable reporting to police or live in states of violence, because the systems are not set up in a way that is incredibly trauma-informed for those survivors to come forward. So I think that this event today is really important, and this week is really important, because we want, you know, the women and children in our community who more often than men are victims of violence to know that there are an abundance of service providers in the community who can help you navigate that process from reporting to the police all the way through the court process.
Can you walk me through what you want to see changed there?
I think that when women are brave enough to come forward and then charges to Crown Council are not approved, I think what people need to realize is that actually leaves the woman even more at risk than she was in the first place. So she's been brave enough to come forward and brave enough to provide a statement to police and brave enough to say, hey, I want my voice to be heard. And then if charges aren't approved or the court process itself isn't trauma-informed, now that woman and her family are potentially more at risk mm-hmm. now that they've reported. So I think, you know, as a community, as a society, I think we need to really, you know, not soften the language around this. I think we need to talk plainly and transparently about what this process looks like for women and how hard it is to go through from beginning to end.
Violence against women often leads to lengthy court processes, with cases taking 6 months to a year to resolve after a report is made. During this time, women face challenges such as inadequate safe housing options, leaving them vulnerable and in even more unsafe situations. While community partner agencies like the Northern Society of Domestic Peace provide essential shelter and support, many women and families live in a constant state of fear as their abusers may be present in the community, despite contact restrictions that can be really difficult to enforce in communities this size. This prolonged and precarious situation highlights the urgent need for effective resources and support systems for survivors.
So I think raising awareness about what women and families have to go through when they do report is really important for community to realize mm-hmm. because those we do need systems in our community, housing, health, social services, to be there for women and children to support them once they make that decision to come forward.
How does the RCMP actually do that meaningful outreach and have and build trust in a community? As you said, the number is 33 this year reported. Mm-hmm. We're only mid-April. And it's a very small community. It's a very tight-knit community. Yeah, what is the RCMP working on as far as informing officers, but also to large policy changes?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a really good point. So when we talk about violence against women, there's domestic violence policies, and then there's also like sexual assault services and policies. So there's actually some differences between those two. So in terms of domestic violence, one of the biggest things for police is that when a woman calls saying that they're in a violent relationship, police have no choice but to go and arrest that man, you know, for what has happened there. So right then and there in of itself, there's the issue of choice, right? So and that is set up in a way because we know that women often don't report. And then after they do report, they're often in more danger. So that's why RCMP policy is set up where you must arrest upon being called for a domestic violence call. Sexual assault services is quite a bit different. There's choice there. There's whether or not, you know, you want to go through that process or you want to report. So those two policies are different. So in terms of
outreach work, we want women to know that they have options in the community if they don't want to report. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where we rely heavily on our partner agencies to put in robust safety plans for women and children who don't feel safe to report because they feel like it's going to put them at more risk, or, you know, they don't want to go navigate that system process. It's too overwhelming for them. So sometimes starting with a safety plan through our partner agencies can be the safest option.
Mm-hmm. You know, even in the way that we're speaking about this, and I'll be frank, something I haven't shared publicly, but that I've had to report, not intimate partner violence, but I've had to report a violent encounter that I had with someone that I knew. And coming to you was a massive decision for me, and I know you mm-hmm. personally. The burden, and I don't mean to just speak from my personal perspective at all, but the burden is still on women to create safety plans and to have shelter. So when does this disparity change?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think part of this advocacy this week is also, you know, shedding a light on if you're a man in the community, you know, you're a person in a position of power, you come with privilege, that it's your responsibility as an ally to advocate and also support women because you're in a different position and of power and privilege within society, and you know, we are not. And I think that the strength that it takes women to come and report to the police station is something that I always view as an honor. When somebody wants to come in and report to me their truth and their story, that's something that I consider a privilege and an honor to create a safe space for that. And that is where we need to start. I think I just want the community to realize that through my work in media relations, we often share, you know, incidences where people are charged, you know, with assault and assault with a weapon. And community really appreciates that information because they want to know what's happening in community. But we don't often share, you know, the men in our community who are facing charges of assault because they've assaulted their partner, because we want to protect the survivor. That's all. That's our biggest goal. And so it's often not even talked about a lot in our community from a media relations perspective. You know, we're not sharing the names of the men in our community who have allegedly, you know, committed these offenses against their partner, because we want to protect also the survivors in the community. So I think it's just for a community to be alive mm-hmm. to the fact that this is happening in our community a lot, and it's not being reported on, but we just want people to realize that it's here and that we all have a job to create a safe space for everyone.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's clear that the challenges faced by survivors of violence are significant. Bronwyn's art installation serves as a poignant reminder of the need for visibility and conversation, while Constable Feudart highlights the importance of an informed and compassionate response from law enforcement. It is so important for everyone, but especially men in our community, to engage in this dialogue and take action to support those affected. Together, we can work towards a future where violence against women is not tolerated and every individual feels safe and empowered. Thank you for taking the time to listen today, and thanks especially to Bronwyn Young and Office and Constable Jocelyn Feudart for their time. Next on CICK News, we're discussing experiential learning in early childhood education with a particular emphasis on Indigenous perspectives. Caitlin Moon is a Chilliwack-based educator who traveled to Sikidak in March to teach IECE, or Indigenous Early Childhood Education, with a focus on birth and bonding. CICK News collaborated with Caitlin and the Sikidak Education Center to teach a class of 10 IECE students to create an audio documentary about birthing stories, which you'll hear snippets of later on in the show. The focus of these pieces are how varied birthing stories can be, and each student recorded, edited, and produced their own 3 to 8 minute piece in only 3 days. Let's have a listen.
My name is Caitlin Moon, and I'm an early childhood educator, and I teach the Indigenous Early Childhood Education Program for Nicola Valley Institute of Technology.
Okay, can you tell me a little bit about the IECE course, and specifically to the work that you were doing in Glen Vowel Education Center?
The course that I was teaching is focused on child development. It's specifically looking at children from conception to 2 years of age. And that was one of the pieces that was really powerful about this course, is thinking about birth and bonding and what the impact that makes for a child in their life.
Yeah, what did you think when you heard the pieces and the interviews?
I was really happy with the outcome of the stories, and I find that birth stories are so powerful. Like, it's something that a lot of people who have had children have a really emotional story, even that they remember all these interesting details about it. So I found it to be a really great opportunity for the students to be able to explore that, and just such a wonderful way of how we can connect with the curriculum.
I was surprised actually at how much the students were willing to share, and even with their partners in the interview were also willing to share that experiential learning, as you mentioned, skills sharing, kind of getting outside of your comfort zone in an educational way. What do you think that does for future learners?
I think it's a lot about developing the skills, because we can talk about theory and we can talk about, topics like conception, and it can feel very distant, or it can feel very, scientific or just out of our grasp when we're talking about cells and things like that. So when we're able to bring it into talking about a human experience, I think that we connect with it in a different way. And when I think about my experiences of going to take early childhood education, it was the more hands-on field trips and things like that that are the ones that come to my mind and what really shaped my perspectives as an early childhood educator. So wanting to create a similar experience for the SICKYDAC students, wanting to really support them in having experiences where the work matters and that they have that heart connection with it. It's not just the brain connection.
Caitlin, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me about this today.
Yeah, no problem. It's nice to talk with you.
Hello, my name is Allison Spence. I'm in the ECE program, and I'm doing an interview on Shantae Helen on birth and bonding. She has two babies, one girl and one boy. How is pregnancy for you?
Pregnancy for me was, it was good in the beginning, and like then towards the end, it was like kind of rocky. And then the labor was like really long for my first one, so it was good and then rocky. My partner actually made sure he bonded while I was pregnant by like talking to my belly and reading like certain books and playing like classical music to my belly too, and like just always like making sure he was known to the baby or whatever, always talking to baby. And to me, I thought it was like kind of like I was thrown off guard because I wasn't used to that at all or anything, and then I got used to it, learned to love it.
With me, I just felt super awkward. I was like, hello,
baby. Yeah, like that's how I felt too. And then, like, I would more so use my belly for like things like my bowl of cereals.
Did you find out the gender?
Yeah, I did. I really wanted to find out the gender for my first baby because I was too excited and anticipated to like wait it out like everybody else is supposed to.
Who had skin to skin first?
So with my daughter, my significant other had skin to skin first because I was having like complications down there, and they were waiting for the doctor to come in to like sew me up and everything while I was just like chilling there. And then the first time when the first doctor came in, he didn't like sew me up right, so they had to call another doctor to fix his mistake and come back in. And then so my significant other had more skin time than I did. And then with like our second, I got skin to skin time like right away. And then he was like, what about me? Like I was like, oh yeah, like you need skin to skin time too.
Did you plan on having babies?
No, I actually did not plan on having babies. They were complete surprises.
Yeah. So how are you doing now with everything and
I'm doing pretty good, you know. And you get like a little hiccup in the road and you find another direction to pursue your dreams and your school, because like this is where I was gonna go before I had kids, but that's what I was gonna do, was to go be a teacher. And then my little babies came, and then now I continue on the journey. So pretty good, I'd say.
Thanks to my guest Shantae for taking the time to share her story with me. I'm Allison Spence for ECE. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Shantae Helene. I chose to interview Allison because I was particularly interested in her one story about her son. I really gravitated towards that and took an interest in that.
Mine would be with my son while I was pushing
He was almost out already, but his heartbeat was going fast, so they had to cut me. And then they grabbed him out, and the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck. Mm-hmm. And both of us were like kind of blue and purple and whitish or something, but we both came through, and that's probably the most memorable one.
What did it feel like when one of your children were placed on your chest? What was the feeling like for you?
It was just joy, just because like the pregnancy felt like forever, and then like having them skin with you was like so emotional that like, oh, I actually pulled through on this.
Yeah, because like you never know, right? 50-50.
Yeah.
Each labor. Would you be able to describe how you felt after like baby was out of you? Like your feeling personally?
It was overwhelming just because I was just thinking about their future and everything. And
everything hitting all at once?
Yeah. So it was just kind of overwhelming. Like, oh, I have this little human being that I have to take care of.
Yeah. Did you have any worries or concerns about your child bonding with their new sibling?
But someone told me, when you have your baby's going to be bigger than you thought. And then also, you got to get her into trying to bond with them by like saying, oh, okay, you need to help me with this. So that helped me quite a bit because she's like, yeah, I'm in that role now.
Yeah, it gave her like be like a place. She felt like she had a place to help.
Yeah.
And being needed.
Yeah, and that she's still there.
Yeah.
So she's happy about it after.
A new role to accept.
Hi, my name is Rochelle Wesley. I'm in the IECE course, and today I'm interviewing my fiancé, the father of my child, Gavin George. I chose to interview him to see the dad's perspective of birth and bonding and hear his side of the story of how he experienced everything as a first-time dad.
What were you feeling when, like, it was time for me to, like, go into labor and, like, give birth?
Well, I don't think it was too hectic. From what I remember, like, it was pretty easy. You knew when you were ready because you already went through this already, so I was kind of following your lead. We went to the hospital, they checked you, and it was just the time, like, I was just ready.
What was going through your head while I was giving birth?
It was just excitement and curiosity that took over. I was just so focused and watching everything, all that stuff that was going down. I was incredibly happy. It was just the best day of my life. Just having Cairo come into the world, it was just a beautiful thing, just to witness and be part of.
Were you scared at all?
Not too much. I was just more focused on you and what was happening. So just with you and your pain and trying to be there for you. So I was kind of occupied. I didn't have time to
like think about yourself or anything, just focused?
Yeah, just focused, honed in. That's kind of like how I am with everything, right? So
what was your like favorite part of that whole like the birthing process?
Just knowing that he was coming. The moment that he came out, like, the midwife, she was worried because his head was turned a certain way. That kind of scared me a little bit, but she corrected it. As soon as she corrected Cairo.
No, kinda... I thought he did it himself.
Did he?
Yeah, I remember he flipped and she's like, what are you doing?
Just did a somersault. Yeah. But that moment too, he just came out and shot into her arms. Like, there was no time. Like, I wish I was more involved to receive him. That would have been awesome. I wish I had a video of what just happened in that moment. I was in that moment and just experiencing that whole thing. Just crazy how, yeah, he just shot out.
Did you feel like an instant connection with him, or did you feel like while I was pregnant, or like was it after?
As soon as you told me, there was obviously instant love because I was already ready to be a dad. I always wanted to be a dad. And I was just happy it finally happened, ready for him.
I would like to say thank you to my guest, Gavin, for taking the time to share his thoughts and his story with me. My name is Rochelle. Thank you all so much for listening.
To hear Rochelle, Shantae, and Allison's full interviews, go to smithersradio.com and find CICK Fresh at 12 p.m. on Sundays, or tune in to 93.9 FM this Sunday at noon. Thank you to Allison, Shantae, and Rochelle for sharing your work with me, and to Caitlin for taking the time to speak with me about the importance of experiential learning in early childhood education. And a massive thank you to the educators, coordinators, and ICE class who all did wonderful work on this project. In a special Earth Day segment, we had a very special guest join us in the CSEK studio yesterday for a unique and wild conversation. Bruce Kanowski is a lynx puppet who's a passionate advocate for wildlife conservation. Bruce was in Smithers to share his insights from his adventures and how he inspires people, especially kids, to appreciate and protect our beautiful and natural world. Bruce is used to being the interviewer, but we turned the tables on him a bit, and I interviewed Bruce for a short stint at CSEK to promote his Keep It Wild BC campaign in an effort to preserve our wild environment for future generations. If you'd like to see a picture of Bruce, make sure to follow CICK Out There on Instagram and CICK Events on Facebook for a snapshot of Bruce doing a station ID. Bruce, this is so exciting. Introduce yourself. I mean, I just noticed you outside and it's kind of hard to miss a big lynx walking around downtown Smithers. So, yeah.
Well, my name's Bruce Kanowski and I'm just traveling around BC talking to people about wild spaces and wild places and what makes them special, you know? And well, I kind of notice that my nieces and my nephew, my kids, they're always on their tablets and they're never outside anymore, you know? And I just wanted to show them, hey, there's lots of wild spaces left. And I think it's important, you know, that we show them and people understand that, hey, we can still go there. We can still do these things, you know?
So what's wild in Smithers for you? What's wild enough for Bruce Kanowski?
The mountains, the river. Where was I yesterday? We were in Hazleton, and we were at the confluence of the Bulkley and the Stikine. And man, let me tell you, that's some real beauty right there.
Absolutely.
And I saw a rabbit, and I started to salivate. I almost chased it, but then I just paused and enjoyed the moment.
Oh, beautiful. Bruce, I think I did tell you before we were recording, my last name means rabbit, but it's just a name, okay? No, close your mouth. Please, Bruce, please close your mouth.
So, I'm just joking. Let's just
keep it professional, shall we?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so wild spaces, that's exciting. So you mentioned the river, the mountains. Yeah, what else? I mean, like, do you have a message? Do you want...
Well, yeah, I mean, let's just try and keep BC wild, you know, and... It takes everybody, I think. It takes hunters and environmentalists and fishermen, and it takes all sorts. Miners. Everybody needs to do their part, and I think you'll learn everybody finds the beauty everywhere, you know?
Yeah, it's a beautiful sentiment. And it is Earth Day today, too, so is there anything extra special about your message today, or are you doing something to sort of commemorate the event?
Well, not really. I think every day can be Earth Day, you know, in your very own way.
Solid. Yeah, that's beautiful.
Let me ask you, when you go outside, where do you go? What's your favorite place?
My favorite place is to go to the Bulkley River, actually, the Wetsenqua. I live close to a really beautiful park. It's like one of Smithers' last like really treed parks here. And I walk through the park, down the trails. I've seen moose down there. And yeah, that's right. And yeah, I actually just like to go. And on a hot enough day, I just jump right into the river. But it's a very strong river, so people should be careful about it. Yeah.
Okay.
I like to pick berries on the mountain when it's berry season. And yeah, I mean, honestly, I see wild things everywhere. You know, you walk down the street, you see deer. I had a moose that was actually hanging out in my neighbor's backyard as well. But yeah, it's kind of hard to look around and not find beauty here.
Yeah, and exactly. I think that's the point. You know, we need to show these young kids of mine that, hey, there's still lots of beauty out there and it's worth protecting.
Well, Bruce, thank you so much for coming into CICK. And for anyone tuning in and listening, this has been CICK 93.9 FM, Smithers Community Radio, where we are proudly broadcasting on the unceded Wet'suwet'en territory. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Nice to meet you.
CICK News is funded by the Government of Canada, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and is a participating station in the Local Journalism Initiative. On behalf of my colleague Dan Messick and myself, Pam Hassan, thanks for listening.